Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
How about that?
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! The heavyweight champion is taking the mandatory H-out, and Foreman is as poised as can be!
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
If he gets through this dragnet, it's as slippery as a nail in a barrel full of oil.
Pedro Fernandez.
It works for me.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen, live worldwide, coming at you, emanating from the Sports Byline Studios in the City by the Bay, San Francisco, check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Often imitated but never duplicated, 37, make that 38 plus years now, of knocking out all bums. My name is Pedro Fernandez, welcome to the show. Of course, I am your modest host, I'm also a four-time Golden Glove Champion, award-winning writer, so evidently, I know my way around the ring. Bottom line is, for the next 2 hours, whether I do or not, we can have some fun. You can like me, you can hate me. Bottom line is, for the next 2 hours, we're talking boxing and mixed martial arts, too, a little bit. To an extent, we'll cover the UFC, but we're going to delve into the world of boxing like you've never seen it. We'll hear from Oscar Valdez, the victorious 130-pound champion of the WBC. Of course, last night, shocking the world, shocking Miguel Burchell, a 2.5, making it a 3-1 underdog come fight time. Guess what? He lit Burchell up like the White House Christmas tree, and this was the Battle of Sonora, Mexico. Both these guys come to us from Sonora, Mexico. So we'll hear from Oscar. We'll also hear from the Godfather, Larry Merchant. He'll spend some time with us. Coach John Johnson, yeah, he's doing okay. I'm talking about the guy, of course, that orchestrated the upset of Mike Tyson, the meltdown of Mike Tyson by James Buster Douglas. He'll be here sometime in the show. We'll also hear from WBC President Jose Suleiman, and, of course, our favorite brain doctor, Dr. Setti. Bottom line is, he knows what he's talking about. I'm going to ask him about square boxing. That'll take place in hour number two, of course. 2 hours of Ring Talk Live worldwide on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Channel 217, and like 1,000 other internet platforms. Of course, we're also coming to you. This is the last rehearsal day of the Twitch.tv broadcast. After this, we're going for broke. Bottom line is, you can watch us on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, often imitated, but never duplicated.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
The horns of the mighty Tower of Power bring us back from the break for us. You can check them out, towerofpower.com. They're rocking and rolling with, according to Cudi, new musical drops. They're not albums or CDs anymore. They're drops, according to the Cut, man. So Tower of Power's got some new drops out. Check it out, towerofpower.com. Well, Saturday night, the bubble in Las Vegas, of course, the MGM Grand. What can I say? The young man came to fight. I'm talking about Oscar Valdez from Mexico, of course, a fantastic fighter, a good amateur. He was in the Olympics not once, I think, but twice, won the world championships as a youth. At the end of the day last night, he was the world champion at 130 pounds, and it was a bit of a surprise because the oddsmakers, some oddsmakers had him down as many as 5-1, 4.5-1. Of course, it closed about 3-1. A lot of late money coming on Valdez. Valdez, of course, now 29-0. 23 knockouts. It was an impressive performance. He knocked Belchel down not once but twice. And I got to tell you, the first knockdown, you got to give the referee credit because the ropes did hold him up, and that constitutes a knockdown. In other words, the referee did the right move there. And, of course, at the end of the fight, it was just time to stop it. I mean, the man was out cold. He was knocked out clean. And you got to give it to Oscar Valdez, because I will mention this after we hear from Oscar. But I know I'll mention it now. He got down on his knees. You know, Beltran was on the stool. You can see this picture at fightnews.com. It's all over the world. But after the fight, Burchell wakes up after being knocked out. I mean, he was unconscious. He was sleeping. He took a nap. Okay. So he gets up, sit him on the stool. He's all weary and this and that. And then Oscar Valdez comes over and gets down on his knees and starts talking to him. There's a picture of that up at fightnews.com. And I tell you, folks, it almost made me cry this morning. I guess I must be a softie, but that almost made me cry. 29-0, 23 KOs, of course. Belchel dropping to 38-2 with 34 whacks. Here's Oscar Valdez post-fight.
He's a guy I have nothing but respect. And, you know, we said we weren't friends after once we signed, and that was true. After the fight, you know, I want to go see him. I wish him the best. He can be the champ at 130 pounds. I think he struggled a lot to make plays, so I got nothing bad to say about him. He's a true champ. I wish him the best.
Oscar, you dominated from the first second till that knockout. What was going through your mind, round one, round two, round four, round five?
Stay focused always. He came in with a good body shot. I said, wow, he is hard. Every time I was hit his face, he had a strong, I felt like I was hitting a rock. We got the thing done. I listened to my father, listened to my corner, Betty Reynoso, and we got it done.
Frank, you've known him from day one, from the Olympics?
Oh, yeah.
You remember you called me and you said, hey.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. You were there. You went.
And now, what do you say about him shocking the world tonight? Biggest upset since Mike Tyson and,
No.
Yes?
No. Yes? Come on, man.
Oscar, after the win, you went like, shh. What did you mean by that, for those who don't know?
I mean, people doubted me. People said that I wasn't going to. Boxing analysts, boxing experts, my idol said it. They all said I was going to get knocked out. And I stayed calm. I said, okay, I'm going to prove everybody wrong. There's nothing better in life than proving people wrong. And don't let nobody tell that to people. Don't let nobody tell you you can't do something. Because if you start listening to it, you might start believing in it. Always believe in yourself. Train hard. Be disciplined in life. And anything's possible. Call it out. Let the universe and ask God for whatever you want. And everything's going to be accomplished.
Oscar Valdez, what can I say? A humble young man, no doubt about that. As I said, 29 and zip, 23 KOs. A 3-1 underdog come fight time. And you know, I looked at this fight saying, you know, can he chop down the bigger tree? That's what it basically boiled down to. And if you looked at these guys last night physically, I mean, Belcher walked in the ring at 146 pounds. I don't know what Oscar Valdez's exact weight was, but he looked very small compared to Belcher. In fact, if it was all boiling down to size, I would have shut off the TV and said, Oscar's going to have a short night. But guess what? He won almost every round, as I said, knocked him down twice, and in the end was a hell of a stoppage, maybe the knockout of the year. At the end of the night, we've got a new star in boxing, and boxing needs plenty of stars. Speaking of stars, guy once was a star. I'm talking about Adrian Broner. Remember Adrian? Yeah, Adrian pulled another boner, folks. I kid you not. Last night he fought Giovanni Santiago. Santiago came in undefeated with 14-0 with a draw. Of course, he left the ring a loser after 12 rounds. The scores were 115-112, 116-111, 117-111. Now get this. I'm going to run these punch stats down to you. Now you don't always believe in punch stats because numbers sometimes are deceiving, but not in this case. Okay. The young man who lost the fight landed 207 of 697 punches thrown. So he landed 207 punches in total, right? Broner, not a power puncher per se, landed 98 punches out of 308 thrown. How did they give that fight to him? Just on paper, that stinks, no doubt about it. But that's the way they do things over there in PBC. I'm talking about Premier Boxing Champions and Mr. Al Haymon. At the end of the night, Broner is a loser. Was a loser going in. They call him a four-division champion. You got to be kidding me. You're trying to tell me you put him on the same level as Thomas the Hitman Hearns and Roberto Duran? You got to be kidding me when people say that. Anyway, makes me want to puke. At the end of the night, Broner was a winner. Let's hope that he walks into a big brick wall real, real soon, because I'm sort of tired of the Broner act, aren't you? Bottom line is, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. On the line from Columbus, Ohio, I'm talking about the coach, John Johnson, the man that orchestrated the greatest upset in boxing history. I'm talking about the meltdown of Mike Tyson by James Buster Douglas. Coach, I love you. How you doing?
Love you too, buddy. I'm doing fine. Trying to make them dreams happen.
You know, you scared me because I wasn't able to contact you for a little while on the holidays, this and that. I wasn't seeing you, and I freaked out, and I told people on the air about 2 weeks ago, somebody find Coach John Johnson for me. He's not picking up the phone. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, well, you're just calling an old number, I think.
That shows you where I'm at. So, listen, your health is good. How's Buster doing? You talk to him?
Yeah, he's doing good. You know, he's a boxing coach at one of the rec centers, and he loves it. He loves working with kids. I always say, Buster's more comfortable around kids than his adults, you know?
Yeah. Not
just, yeah, his personality. He loves being around kids, and so it's a perfect job for him, you know?
You got him that gig. That was pretty cool, getting him that gig with the city of Columbus. Now, J.D. McCauley passed away a fortnight ago. Of course, he was one of Buster Douglas's trainers. He had that barbecue pit, and I think it sort of worked against Buster because, you weren't there that day, but one day we were in the office, and they had barbecue at 11 a.m.
Yeah, I don't know. I know.
I was there. I was there.
Yeah. Well,
barbecue was good.
Yeah.
The barbecue.
Yeah.
Okay.
JD was the most critical person of our team because when Buster went to him and said, "I'm going to restart my career. What do you think I should do?" And he said, "I think you should go see Johnny Johnson." And he called me and we set up a meeting. And 6 years later, you know, we went to Tokyo. So, but JD was awesome. He was an awesome friend, great trainer, great, he was a great trainer. People did great going into the Tyson fight.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not always before in fights and so on and so forth. Buster included, and maybe the training included and so on. But that fight, there's great preparation. You prepare to win, and that's what happened.
Your heart stopped when he went down, didn't it?
What's that?
Your heart stopped when Buster got knocked down, didn't it? No?
No. What I did, this is going to sound crazy. When he went down, he fell towards us backwards. And as soon as he hit the floor, I turned for a split second and looked at my son who was sitting behind us. And my thought was then, I'm proud of him no matter what happens. But then when I seen him roll over and hit the canvas, I said, he's okay. You know, and he got up at count nine. And when he came back and sat down, I started yelling at him, you know, he's going to come like hell, you understand? He's going to come like hell because you know what boy Mike was, you know, I'm going to come and tear your head off. So,
you know, one time we were kicking it, you and I, and I said to him, I said, why do you think James got in such great shape against Mike Tyson? He looked over him, he said, because we thought Tyson might kill him.
Yeah.
That's what you told me. You had to get in shape for a killer.
Yeah, oh, no doubt. Fighting Mike Tyson was a great motivator to get ready. Because if you didn't get ready, he's going to tear your ass up. You know, I mean, that was and I gained great respect for Mike Tyson during that fight. I thought we'd make him quit. I thought we'll beat him up for 6-7 rounds and he'll say, fuck it, you know. But
coach,
he didn't quit.
Coach.
And then he got up. You know, we're not on HBO. Then he got up, and I had great respect for him then because, man, he was
hurt.
He took a lot of punishment,
He did. For anybody to try to say Mike Tyson wasn't in shape for that, they don't know boxing. Coach, I want to wish you the best. I want to thank you for the four-letter words live on the radio, which is going to get me in a lot of is going to get me in a whole lot of trouble. But you know, I'm used to it. Coach, you've been getting me in trouble for 25, 30 years. What the hell? What the hell? Anyway,
right, love you.
Kiss your wife. We'll talk soon.
I sure will. Bye.
All right. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Coach John Johnson, man. Of course, what can I say? We spent time together in Columbus, Ohio on many, many occasions. I got to go back and do a lot of television back there. Of course, the first time I met him and Buster, I talked to him on the phone the first time, and they set me up with an interview before he beat Mike Tyson. I was the only one that interviewed him prior to the Tyson fight. Everybody else said, you're crazy. But Mike Marley of the New York Post told me, he's challenging for the heavyweight championship. He deserves the respect to be interviewed. And I did, and he won. Straight up, life has never been better for Buster Douglas. And Mike Tyson, of course, a big awakening call. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Jeff Tamalier on the guitar. Good old Jeff. Man, Jefferson Airplane, Jefferson Starship, Tower of Power, Average White Band, Jeff's made it around. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. Of course, we are celebrating the win of Oscar Valdez, of course, capturing the WBC title last night. What can I say other than right on, and I can't give him enough props for that picture that was on the front page of Fight News. Him on his knees in front of Burchelt, the former champion, Miguel Burchelt. The fact that he was there on his knees in front of him, giving him praise after knocking him out, was just like, that was the epitome of what's good about boxing. It just was. In fact, speaking of what's good in boxing, we'll bring in WBC President Jose Suleiman in hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Last night in the world of the barbaric cage fights, Derek Lewis knocked out Curtis Blaydes. Blaydes was licking him like a stamp, but he got overconfident, didn't look for that uppercut. Basically, basic boxing. Listen, everybody's winning in the UFC today basically with boxing skills. I mean, once in a while they get guys on the ground, but for the most part, they're winning with boxing skills. Last night, Derek Lewis took a licking for a long time. I thought he was going to get lit up like a White House Christmas tree. In fact, he was through a minute and 26 seconds of round number two until he knocked out Curtis Blaydes with one uppercut shot. Outside of that, you know, I'm not a real super big fan of the UFC, but Francis Ngannou is coming back. We'll talk about the heavyweight champion of the world, uncrowned. Yeah, I know he's uncrowned, but he's a monster, folks. I kid you not. Francis Ngannou, a former professional boxer, probably could have, I think he's going to come back to boxing. I really do. I think he's going to be a crossover star. I think once he licks Stipe Miocic in the rematch, of course, they fought the first time, and Miocic, the former Cleveland, Ohio, and Ohio State Golden Glove champion, of course, he was a winner in that fight, a five-round decision. And, you know, as rough as it was in that first round for Miocic with Francis Ngannou all over him, I think he will not survive this next time around. Alexander Volkanovski is going to be in the co-feature taking on Brian Ortega. Brian Ortega, of course, is a guy that I thought they should have thrown in the towel against when he took on Max Holloway. They let him take 10 minutes of unnecessary beating. Once the competition is over, the fight should be over. Now I'm hoping that my next guest feels the same way. Of course, he is a doctor of note, Dr. Netanyahu. How are you, sir?
Good, Pedro. How are you?
I'm doing okay. So tell us a little bit about your background. Before I tell people you're my brain doctor. Tell me what your background is.
Well, I'm a neurologist by training. So, you know, I do see a fair number of patients with concussions, traumatic brain injury. I head the concussion center at Cornell, which is in New York City, and I also serve as the chief medical officer for the New York State Athletic Commission.
You know, I was concussed one time in Las Vegas. I fought in the National Golden Gloves at 147 pounds, which was a no-no because I'm 139 pounders, so I thought I would be lazy and not knock off the extra 8 pounds. Anyway, I got knocked around. I got hit so hard that when I was on the ground, Doc, I don't know if you can envision this or not, but the ropes are horizontal in a boxing ring. But when you're knocked down, they're vertical. They run up and down. And I was freaking out. What is that? Up and down ropes. I couldn't believe it. But that was being concussed.
That's right. And what a lot of people don't understand is that boxing, and to an extent MMA, are unique sports. They are combat sports. Every punch which is thrown to the head is thrown with the idea of winning by causing a knockout. And a knockout is just another word for, you can say it's a concussion. So when you talk about concussion, think about it as a closed head injury. So when something hits the head, the brunt of the force is borne by the skull. The skull tries to protect the brain, mm-hmm. but some amount of force goes across to the brain. And, you know, as boxing fans, we can divide concussions. We see a lot of concussions in boxing, and you can divide a concussion into a mild concussion, a moderate, and a severe concussion. If you allow me, I'll give you a few examples which will help make this point. A mild concussion, you walk into a stiff jab. A boxer walks into a stiff right. For a few seconds, that boxer is stunned. You'll see them, they're just like stunned for a second. A lot of these players later, if you ask them, they say, I felt my bell being rung. But there's no loss of consciousness. The ref says, are you okay? He says, I'm fine. And, you know, the bout goes on. So point number one, you don't need to have loss of consciousness for a concussion to occur. You could be walking out of a room. You walk right into a door. You walk into a stiff jab. You see the stars. That's a mild concussion. Now, example of a moderate concussion, like a knockout in boxing. The boxer is knocked out. He's lying on the canvas. A lot of times, they will not be able to get up before the count of 10. The ref will stop the fight. Now, if you happen to be a ringside physician like me, when I jump into the ring, I'll sometimes find the boxer is unconscious. But the loss of consciousness is very brief, 10 seconds, 15 seconds, 30 seconds. Very rapidly, the boxer will open his eyes. But when they open the eyes, you find them confused and disoriented, just the way you were given the example. So if you ask them things like, do you know where you are? He or she may not know they are in Madison Square Garden. Do you know whom you're fighting? They don't have the answer. Do you know what date is it today? You know, they're a little confused and disoriented. You give them a minute or so, they start clearing up. They'll say, hey, Doc, let me get up. I know the fight is over. I know where am I? And that's like a moderate concussion. Mm-hmm. Now, a severe concussion will be something different. Like, for example,
last night?
I'll give you, you can say that. Like, you know, where the episode of where the duration of loss of consciousness, the duration of this confusion is much longer. Like a lady I saw, she got hit by an e-bike. She flies off, head hits the cement. And her next memory is waking up in the hospital surrounded by doctors. She has no recollection of the bike hitting her, how she landed up to the hospital. So in a boxing fight, a boxer later says, I have really no recollection of the entire fight. My only memory is, you know, when the doctor was looking at me, I was a little confused and disoriented. So that's like a more severe concussion.
Interesting. You know, when I worked amateur fights, I had a Mission Boxing Club here in back in the 1980s, early 1990s here in San Francisco, and I had a lot of kids who were like 10, 11, 12 years old, 13 years old, this and that. And I was reluctant to let them have contact, but some of them did have contact and some of them competed. So when they were in competition, I had a towel on my hand the entire, every second of the fight, I had a towel on my hand, much like Jerry Tarkanian of the University of Las Vegas Rebels down there, the Running Rebels, except he used to keep it to shut him up. I had it in my hand in order to throw it in the ring in case I saw my guy, one of my kids with crossed eyes or something like that, and the referee didn't see it because the referee is not perfect. But the bottom line is, in the world of the UFC, they let these guys take beatings that are just unparalleled. Those cornermen should be arrested.
Well, you make a very important point. One important point which people need to understand, especially combat sport athletes, boxers, MMA, combatants, you know, I love, just like you, I'm passionate about these sports. I've been boxing myself, but I'm also very passionate about protecting the brain health of these athletes. One thing which athletes need to remember, they themselves at that time may not know they're concussed. A lot of times, the person who's concussed is like in a daze. He or she might have that glassy look, they're slightly out of it. The ref says, are you okay? He might just nod. He or she might nod their head and say, I'm fine. But they are actually concussed. Their legs are not under them. They're slightly swaying. You know that this guy has his bell has been rung. Now, that's important because if you let a concussed athlete continue to fight, two things can happen. He or she might recover, and that's fine. And we see them boxing all the time. Somebody goes down, gets up, finishes the fight, wins the fight. But there's also a possibility that concussed athlete can get hit again and he or she can suffer multiple concussions. And that's where things go down south. And we all are worried about somebody suffering a bleed in the brain. But remember, the bleed in the brain does not occur from one punch. It might be a series of punch which the boxer has taken over the few rounds. And so it's very important that, you know, somebody at the corner, I agree with you, somebody at the corner, because the ref may not be in a position to do that, somebody's keeping a count. How many times is my fighter getting his or her bell rung? How many times did I feel them stagger? At the right point in time, you need to know when to kind of say enough is enough, when to say I think we can go forward. It's a very delicate sort of decision-making process.
I've never seen him throw a towel in the UFC. I've never seen him throw one towel in all the fights.
Right, and you know, that is a culture of combat sports. You never say quit. You never say I'm going to call it a day.
But I gotta say this, when the competition's over, the fight should be over. We'll stick around till after the break. Dr. Nathan Seti is our guest, of course. He is our man, of course, come to us from the, University of Johns Hopkins. He's the director of, medical director of the New York State Athletic Commission. We'll talk with him more after the break. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Channel 217, and like 1,000 other internet platforms. You're tuned to Ring Talk.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Never blame anybody for your own mistakes. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. Your inside look into the world of boxing. MMA, of course, comes to you from the Sports Byline Studios in the City by the Bay, San Francisco, California. Of course, we take it to the East Coast. We bring in our resident brain expert talking about Dr. Netan Sethi. Doc, the reluctance of corners to stop the fight, the reluctance of athletic commissions. I mean, you've got doctors sitting ringside in Nevada watching this go down, and when a guy gets... I mean, it's pretty obvious to me. It's pretty obvious to me that a couple times the guys have been hurt to the point in UFC fights where you need to stop them, and they're not getting stopped.
That's true. I mean, Pedro, the thing with these fights are, like I said, stopping a fight in time is a difficult. I think it's a difficult decision for everybody who's there, ringside or cage side, mm-hmm. without commenting on the fight itself. Since I was not there, it would be irresponsible of me to comment on it. But yes, I think by and large, what the culture I feel should be that we have to understand that fights have to be stopped at times in a timely fashion. You might get, a doctor might get heat by the fans and sometimes justified if the fans feel, they feel that the doctor stopped the fight a little prematurely. And sometimes the boxer or the MMA combatant may be upset about that. But at the same time, you understand it's better to stop it a little too early than a little too late. We all are concerned about the fact that if you stop it late, then that boxer, that fighter is never going to come back again. Sometimes these injuries can be so devastating, as I see as a neurologist, that, you know, you don't get a second chance back in the ring or cage. I think that's the principle which personally me has always guided me. I always put the health and safety of the athlete in front of me.
Speaking of health and safety, I was interviewing Mark Gastineau. He was a former New York Jet, former NFL star. They call him the member of the sack exchange in New York City. Anyway, he was NFL all pro for a while, and I interviewed him in 92. We were doing a boxing interview together, and he had no attention span, none whatsoever, and I was wondering what's going on. I had to step on his foot to get his attention in a live interview. I kid you not, the elbow didn't work. So I thought about it a little while. I said to myself, you know, this guy's a little bit punchy. He's never taken any punches. And then I sat down with Gene Washington, who was formerly with the SF49ers, and he was number 18. He was a wide receiver, and he used to catch the ball all the time and fall down. So I said to him, we were doing radio together, I said, Gene, why did you always fall down when you caught the ball? He goes, if I didn't fall down, I wouldn't be able to talk to you nowadays. Is the NFL that bad?
Well, again, I would say the NFL has done a lot to improve to protect the health and safety of the athletes. It's unlike boxing. It's a contact sport. It's not a combat sport. But if you've ever been to an NFL game, head contacts are common. That further emphasizes that, you know, this is an ongoing work. As a community, I would say as a boxing community, MMA community, football community, we all have to work together. I think that's where the education is very important. Like what you are doing right now, I feel what I'm doing right now, the biggest thing I can contribute is education. Education for everybody, not just the athletes. It's for the trainers, for the coaches. You know, how many times an athlete gets sparred, while sparring gets a concussion. We don't even know, but we can prevent those concussions that occur in sparring. They are training for these fights. They are putting in 40, 50 rounds sparring before they come for these big fights. So again, that same point comes in that it's an ongoing work and we are not there yet. Someday people will look back at us and say, did they do enough? And I want to feel that we did enough. We did enough. We protected these athletes. We protected their brains.
Good enough. Doc, I always thank you for telling it like it is when you come on the show. It's an honor to know you. It's an honor to meet you. I hope we can hook up in the future real soon. And the bottom line is with this pandemic going on. Now, from your medical point of view, can you see some light at the end of the tunnel?
I do. I do see light at the end of the tunnel. I think the vaccinations are going on. For people who are listening to your podcast, Please talk to your doctors about vaccines. They are safe. There's enough safety evidence about them. If you have concerns about the vaccine, discuss it with your healthcare provider. I think the vaccines will be the way the world will open up. You know, important thing is that, you know, when you work a ringside event, you remember you can get infected. You might be okay, but you bring the virus back home and give it to your mother or father. So we all have to do a job. And I think that's where, again, we have to come together and fight this pandemic.
You know, Dr. Seti, you're my man, no doubt about that. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and telling it like it is. We look forward to seeing you real soon.
Take care, Peter. Thank you for having me on.
The great Dr. Netan Sethi, folks, he just rocks and rolls. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide on Sports Byline.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
It's always real on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Let's take it across the pond to the UK and bring in our ace. I'm talking about Mr. Kenny Rainford. What's up, Big Ken?
Hey, not a
lot. Hey, how's life treating you?
I'm good. Yeah, everything's okay, you know. Lockdown's a bit of a bad one, but, you know, hopefully there's light at the end of the tunnel, you know?
Well, according to my last guest, who's a neurologist on the East Coast from the New York City Athletic Commission, he sees light at the end of the tunnel. I'm all for the vaccine. You know, I took the measles vaccine when I was a kid, and I took the polio vaccine when I was a kid, and I'm 63 years old, and I'm still doing okay. So I think those vaccines work, so I've got a little faith. All of the medical professionals that I talk to say that the vaccine is a go, so I'm going to go with them. Anyway, how are people taking this in the UK? Are they getting the vaccine?
Yeah, we've got about 17 million plus people vaccinated up now, and, you know, they're really putting the foot down with it, you know.
That's good. Have you talked to your buddy Ernie Shavers lately?
I spoke to Ernie a while ago. He's doing okay. Yeah, he's Ernie, you know. He's always a bubbly character, and, you know, hopefully we get him on the show one day.
Yeah, I've had him before, and I will get him again. You know, I'm thinking about Ernie and other heavyweights, and somebody sent me a picture of Michael Doakes today, and they don't realize what a piece of dirt Michael Doakes was. I mean, he damn near sexually assaulted a girl that I was dating in an elevator at the L.A. Forum, at the hotel across the street. He was arrested for rape. Anyway, bottom line is he has left the planet, but, you know, he's nothing. He wasn't a positive force in the world of boxing, much like Ernie Shavers. Not only can Ernie punch, Ernie never had any issues. I mean, you didn't see Ernie like beating up women or domestic violence or drunk driving, none of that kind of stuff. Ernie was clean.
And he's the cleanest athlete I've ever come across in my life. He's never drank, never smoked. His biggest vice is ice cream.
All right, you know, I I'm laughing. I'm not going to go there. ice cream and soda are probably my two weaknesses. I didn't want to go there. What's happening with Josh Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury? Are these guys ever going to fight?
God, it seems like there were some pictures put up of Tyson Fury the other day with him carrying some weight, saying, "Is this a guy really training for a fight?" The thing with Tyson Fury is, he has to carry weight, otherwise he burns out. You'll understand what I'm talking about. Yep. There, you know, but he hasn't got the greatest physique in the world. So when he does carry a bit of weight, he doesn't carry it well. So, but come fight time, he'll be in shape. I think it's a matchroom thing where they're trying to drag it out because of the, inactivity that Fury's had, trying to play games in that department. But you know, I'm not too sure. We had some great fights last night, you know, some good fights.
What did you think of the fight we had here in the States between Burchelt and Oscar Valdez?
Listen, let me tell you this much. That Valdez has either got bricks in his hands, or some kind of dynamite, because it was very, very impressive fight, and I made up for him. But if you look at a couple of the left hooks he was staggering Belchev with early on in the fight, it looked like he was using the inside of the glove, not the knuckle part. The actual knockout was the knuckle part of the glove. But if you look at it closely, his left hooks were landing with the inside of the glove, you know?
Bottom line is, you know, Mr. Valdez, an outstanding amateur, of course. Frank Espinosa signed him, and Frank is a boxing manager, and he goes back with me like to the 1980s. I remember when he was just like a boxing fan, and then he started getting these different champions. Of course, he spotted Oscar Valdez at the Olympics, no doubt about it. Valdez is a good fighter. But is he too small to fight at 130? Did you see the size discrepancy last night?
I did, but he made up for it in punching power. You know?
But I gotta ask you, you're the boxing expert, how often does that, I mean, that doesn't seem like to be the best way to, navigate your course as you move up in weight. In other words, if you move up in weight, you should be able to put on a few pounds and look like a 130 pounder. He looked like he was a 122 pounder compared to that guy last night.
Yeah, well, you know, we had a similar fight in Britain last night with Mirko and Charlton.
Mm-hmm.
And Charlton looked like, yeah, oh my god, he looked like 20 pounds heavier than, but he still got beat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But like you say, it's better to look like you carry, you know, like you can use the division to its full extent with your size, but you know, size does help along the road with the reach, et cetera, you know?
Well, you know what they say. You know what I say. Size matters in two things, pornography and combat sports.
Sounds about right. That sounds about right.
Kenny Rayford's our guest. That's too much.
You were talking about Michael Doakes there. People forget, you know, Michael Doakes was a sparring partner for Ernie. In 1977, when he fought Ali, Michael was brought in as a sparring partner because obviously he had extremely fast and mm-hmm. fast hands. And, you know, I remember reading a Ring magazine article and they asked Mike Doakes, who's the hardest puncher he ever fought? And he said, Mike Weaver in the second fight we had. And then he went, no, take that back. Ernie Shavers when I sparred with him for the Harley fight with 20 ounce gloves on.
You know that fight with, Mike Weaver and Michael Doakes was a fix, right?
Oh yeah, it's
I mean, the referee Joey Curtis never ever worked again. He never they would never license him for an event again. In other words, they didn't say the fight, they didn't come out and officially say the fight was fixed, but the referee never worked again. And that was one of the most atrocious stoppages probably in the history of the sport.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I remember it vividly. They were fighting and all the cornermen were fighting in the ring after the fight. Oh, it was just a classic, Don King maneuver, to get a WBA title under his belt via Michael Doakes, you know?
And I will say this, and Joey Curtis had no class because there he was posing with Michael Doakes at the post-fight party taking pictures. Oh, that doesn't look good!
No.
that doesn't look good. Hey, so Josh Warrington got upset a fortnight ago. My guy, the prophet, I'm talking about our boxing PhD, Socrates Palmer, he sort of picked that one. What happened to him? Is the fact that he can't punch, is that sort of the demise of fighters from the UK and fighters from the United States as well? Like Berry Gordy, who started Motown Records, Eddie Futch told him, you'll never be champion because you can't punch. He was 13-2 with only 4 knockouts. So he told him he couldn't punch. Is that what the story was with Warrington, that he can't punch and eventually it came home to roost?
The fight was over from round 4. He was out of it from round 4. You know, they're making, they were building Josh Warrington up to be the next superstar and all the rest of it. And I didn't jump on that boat at all. And sadly for Josh, he got found out last week and, got knocked out brutally knocked out. But like I say, the fight was over from the 4th round, you know. And a lot of referees would have stopped the fight in the 4th round. No two ways about it. But it's just one of them, you know. Was he believing his own newspaper clippings and not training like he should do? He's asking for a rematch. Is that a good idea? I don't know. But
probably not. Like but, all right, on the flip side, though, Josh Taylor from Scotland, he's looking really sharp. I mean, I've got high hopes for him.
Yeah.
You don't have it?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm just cautious to say anything because we're getting so many upsets just lately. It's unbelievable, you know?
Well, listen, there's nothing wrong with, listen, I knew a guy that went to the Hall of Fame. His name was Jack Fisk, who was born Jacob Finkelstein. He was a Chronicle boxing writer for 35 years, and he was notorious for getting all his predictions wrong, but he went to the Hall of Fame, so he did something right.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm gonna let you go, but as always, you're always a class act. It's great to have you on. Take care of everybody in the UK and give them my best.
No problem, buddy. Take it easy.
We'll do another raincast, okay?
No problem. Anytime.
That's what these are called, folks. Raincast. You can catch them at anchor.fm after the show. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking into the world of boxing, MMA. The guy I'm real high on, no doubt about it, Josh Taylor from the UK. I mean, he is the guy. He's the junior welterweight champion right now. I think he's a stud. I think he's the best fighter maybe in Europe. I kid you not. You know, I mean, Luke Campbell came from Europe. We saw what happened to Luke Campbell when he took on, of course, Ryan Garcia a fortnight ago. Speaking of Ryan Garcia, is that fight with Manny Pacquiao, is that going to be done or not? Is he going to do it? Is it an exhibition? And speaking of exhibitions, I'm not game for exhibitions. Some of you out there are suckers and you paid for that Mike Tyson, Roy Jones thing. Well, shame on you. I mean, just send me your money. I will find something more entertaining than that. Believe me, I can get a couple of dogs on the street to engage in a better fight than those two guys engaged in. Of course, I think they set you up and they took your money. I mean, Mike's a nice guy and all that kind of good stuff. I don't want to piss him off. He's got his own weed brand, the whole nine yards. But that was a bit of a stinker. When you charge somebody like $50 to watch you and some guy spar for 8 rounds, 2 minute rounds, give me a break. That is a ripoff. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. This is hour number one of two on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, for Sunday, February 21st, 2021. And hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, I will bring in Mauricio Sulaiman of the World Boxing Council and more. Hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, forthcoming after the news right here on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, iHeartRadio, and Sirius XM Satellite Radio, channel 217. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Stay tuned. Hour number two, forthcoming.